Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I am here, albeit briefly, with Dom. Dom, how are you doing this week?
Well, I'm doing well for now. I'm trying to set a record for the shortest appearance on my own show, which, for those of you who are more fans of the Colin side of things, will be a pleasant reprieve this week, as I will be shortly departing. I have a transatlantic flight in less than 12 hours, so I still need to pack and prepare and get to the airport and maybe sleep somewhere in there as well. What that means is not too much time for podcasting, so someone will be filling my shoes this week.
That's right. Dom, you are coming to America for the live Noah at all, and we just wanted to say at the beginning of the show, before me and frankly whoever my guest ends up being this week, I don't even know who it's going to be.
That's why they're a special guest. We don't know who they are. They're just a projection of all of your wildest fantasies.
Yeah, I haven't asked anyone yet, but whoever they are, I'm sure they're going to be great, and they're coming up right around the corner. But Dom, we did want to just get a couple of just housekeeping things out of the way before you came over to the United States for that live know-it-alls. First of all, if you're going to be there in New York City, certainly do come up to us and say hi. Dom will be the guy with the British accent who looks like a Lannister. And I will probably be there. I'm tall and have dark hair. I'm hard to miss. So, Dom, what do you want to say before we throw it over to me and whoever I'm talking to?
Yeah, I'm told I'm shorter and look younger than I sound, which is not how it works or remotely logical, but hey, that's how people identify me. So there you go. So yeah, definitely come and say hi if you feel like it. Always excited to meet new fans of Survivor, new fans of RJP, and just more people in that community. So definitely excited for that whole experience. What that will mean is that our usual service will be disrupted probably for the next few weeks. So obviously today is going to be a little bit different. Next week we may have nothing. We may have our first ever live show. We don't quite know yet, so stay tuned on that front, I guess. And then the week after that, I think you're away for a bit. I get back on the Sunday, so that might be a little late if it comes to you at all, but hoping to resume normal service as soon as possible.
Yeah, we'll get something out there for the merge, and at the very least, and hopefully something every week. But yeah, as Dom mentioned, these next couple of weeks, he's going to be in America. I'm going to be in New York, and then I'm going to be traveling again the following week. So it is going to be a little bit less going on than normal. But fear not, we will certainly be back in full force after that. It's going to be, just for me on a personal level, way, way easier to be podcasting going forward. I'll put it out there. Today was my last day at my job, and I am so happy to just be done with it. But with the exception of the next couple of weeks, it is going to be so much easier podcasting just in general. So bear with us for the time being. We hope to see you guys in New York. We definitely do have plenty still coming along the way. I know we just actually finished recording the next chapter of our BB7 rewatch. We got that done. That's going to be going up very soon. It may actually be up by the time people, or it probably will be up by the time people are hearing this podcast. And then, Dom, you have a podcast coming soon, right? That I was not involved in? Yeah.
Yeah. Some of you who have been listening for a while may remember the podcast we did last year featuring interviews with Andy Heron, Stephen Fishback, and an academic, Amanda Ann Klein, about how people essentially detox from the reality TV experience and how they learn to interact with fans going forward and some of the challenges that poses. And I wanted to do a follow-up to that. And it turns out that the scope of that expanded a bit. So it's now about the general readjustment to life that people go through. So a lot to talk about there. We got a good roster of guests. I just finished talking yesterday with Jordan Baha, who features in one of those segments. And we got a fairly unique perspective from a few other people as well. So that was a lot of fun. That should hopefully be up by the time you're listening to this. I'm going to try and upload that in the waning hours before I leave the country tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, okay. And I will add, I think I've said this on the official record before, but in case I haven't, the best name in all of reality TV to hear spoken with a British accent is Jordan Parhar. All right. So, Dom, I think that's going to do it as far as your portion of this podcast. So I guess let's send it over to me and whoever it is that I'm talking to. Very excited about all of that with the mystery guest.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Okay, so quick second preamble, just Colin with you here this time. I wanted to apologize up front. I didn't notice this until moments ago when I sat down to edit this week's episode, which I recorded this morning, and which was a lot of fun, and we'll send it to you. I swear we will send it to that shortly, but you will notice that my audio for the first hour or so is going to sound different. And it, as far as I can tell, is because for whatever reason, Skype was picking up my laptop microphone instead of my podcasting microphone. I suspect it has something to do with the fact that I unplugged it the other day and may have not have set the preferences back or whatever. I don't know, but it switches over to the correct microphone with maybe about a half hour left in the podcast. But wanted to apologize for that up front. You will notice the difference, but I still think it's at least passable audio, and it was such a fun episode that I certainly didn't want to not release it or anything on those grounds. So I hope you guys still enjoy it nonetheless. And for real now, here you go with this week's Survivor podcast.
Okay, so here we are. Dom is gone now. Dom might actually already be in America by the time that we're actually now recording this new part. But I am thrilled to be here talking about the latest Survivor action as we enter this merge with someone that is also going to be joining us meeting me and Dom in New York this weekend. Very excited for that. Lita Brillman. Lita, how are you?
I'm good. This is my second appearance on Dom and Colin, but the last time was without you. So I feel like if I hadn't met both of you in the same room at the same time, I would just think that you're like sitting alone in your room, just like putting on a British accent and talking to yourself.
Yeah, you're not the first person who has come up with that theory that this is just a one-man operation all along. But yeah, I was thinking about that, actually. You've done an episode with Dom and with me. But we're about to do an episode together. I guess we haven't done it yet, but you will have done one with each of us, but not together. Your co-host on the American Ninja Warrior podcast, Taryn Armstrong, is in that same camp where he's done individual episodes with us, but never at the same time. And it reminded me, I've seen both Art Garfunkel and Paul Simon in concert separately, but never together.
Oh, well, so many people compare me and Taryn to Simon and Garfunkel. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, Lita, as I mentioned, you and Taryn are doing American Ninja Warrior, but I know that's not all that you've been doing on the reality TV wrap-ups feed over at RHAP. This summer, you talked quite a bit of Big Brother on those daily live feed updates. What other shows I know you do So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars, things of that nature. What else do you have going on?
Yeah, I think that about covers it. Dancing with the Stars is the only one that's currently in season. We're doing sort of like an every other week type of thing because there's three of us. We're busy. But yeah, you definitely check that out on their Hapless feed. I'm also now writing weekly Survivor recaps for myentertainmentworld.ca. So that's mostly what I've been up to in terms of reality TV.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And I guess we'll also put out there for people interested in that. I'm sure you're going to be tweeting links to those each week. Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Lita Tweeted and also on Instagram at Lita Grammed if you're interested.
Okay. So you're like Lasher where you've got it. They're all dependent on whatever the platform is. It's not just straight at Colin Stone across the board.
Yeah, exactly. I try to have my synergy, but Snapchat never lets you change the name of your username without deleting the whole thing. So kind of throws a wrench in everything.
I remember that was a big moment for Jordan Parhar, like making the switch on Snapchat, like having to delete and start a brand new account, like long after his season of Big Brother Canada.
Why was his username really embarrassing?
I don't remember even what it was, but he did make it. There was a big transition day where on his old account, he was putting out videos like, follow me on this new account. This one's going to be gone.
Yeah. See, I can't go through that.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose all my beloved followers. Plus, Snapchat's on its way out anyway.
Is it really?
I think so. I think Instagram stories have kind of displaced it. I'm not happy about it. I prefer Snapchat to Instagram.
Okay, so I've never been an Instagrammer because years ago I went to Instagram, tried to get at Colin Stone. It was already taken, and I refused to settle for less, so I've just never gone on it. I've never done it. Furthermore, I just don't have anything to take pictures of anyway. No one would care about it. I would have nothing to post on Instagram.
Yeah, well, I didn't want everything to be past tense, but there's already Alita Tweets on Twitter, and she has more followers than me, and she's also a vegan and like a yoga person and all that stuff. And I'm just like, is this me in the future? Like, I don't understand.
That's hilarious. It's like a weird Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, so then I just had to, unlike you, I have little pride and just decided to settle for less.
Yeah. Well, Lita, let's get into some Survivor action. And I want to start with, I know this was a big blindside episode for a lot of people, certainly for me. I was convinced JP, I'm doing this fishback thing myself, that JP was going to be the one who ended up leaving. And Rob was on the Know-It-Alls calling this like the best episode of the season so far. In your view, was this a good episode or was this just tricky editing? Or are they mutually exclusive? Maybe they can be both.
I definitely think that they can be both, but I think the thing about like audience blindsides is that it's not super satisfying when the edit is just obviously trying to trick you. If that makes sense. Like, I think that they're really good if the edit does a really good job of, like, either making you lean one way or being like, oh, who's it? I don't know who it's going to be. Or you have to just go on, like, suspicion or whatever. Like, I think that that's good when you don't know who it's going to be. But when everybody's totally convinced that it's going to be this one person because they totally buried that person. And also, that person is obviously the less popular player. Like, that's not satisfying. The big satisfying audience blindsides are when you think it's going to be your favorite and then actually, boom, Kelly Wentworth, blindside Savage.
That is the exact example that came to my mind when you said that.
Yeah, that's fun. Like, that's exciting. It's not as fun when it's like, oh, here's a great character that the editors have to know that everybody's going to like, and then here's someone who's just, like, literally a nothing person, and they're going to also make him look particularly bad in this episode. Like, what is exciting about that? I guess I don't really find joy or thrill in just the feeling of being shocked.
Right, right. And I know for people who have watched The Genius, this is something they do on The Genius all the time, where they blatantly mislead you about how things are going to go. But on The Genius, after the vote comes in, then you would get, like, a 5-minute breakdown of how things really went and all the ways that they had been, like, laying the groundwork for this big shocking event the whole way. And on Survivor, you just never get anything along those lines. And while it is a big, exciting TV moment, and I would probably say by far the most surprised I've been at any tribal council all season, like maybe even the emotional peak of the season for me so far, even in a spot where I don't even care that much about JP, I don't know if that kind of technique is going to be something that they can go back to too often without people getting upset.
Yeah, I think so too. And yeah. I'm not generally one to feel very good either way about who's going home. Like, I feel like I never know who's going home. but everyone on Twitter, including yourself, was just like, okay, like, this is what it is. And I was like, oh, well, I trust all these people. I guess I can just kind of, like, turn to my notes for the episode, not really pay too much attention to this tribal council. And then I had to go back and rewatch it because I was like, oh, crap. Like, well, there was probably important stuff here.
Right, that's the thing is, right after the yellow team lost the immunity challenge, it was just nothing but just laying it on as thick as possible about how, like, useless JP is, and how clueless he is, and how he's standing there, you know, he's saying, oh, Allie 100% is going to be gone for sure. As you mentioned, like, I was tweeting at 8:45, like, okay, time to switch over to the World Series Game 7 now. Like, we're all safe to tune out of Survivor. This is a foregone conclusion. So you are right that it certainly, I don't want to take anything away from the job they did fooling people. And I do think that that is important in a season. I don't know how this does stack up with what I think makes for a truly great kind of Survivor blindside and audience blindside.
Yeah, I just think that there's no satisfying payoff when you just have literally no idea what happened. And I feel like this actually happened a couple times in maybe it was Millennials versus Gen X, but also a little bit of Game Changers, where it was just like they just didn't explain what happened or how the decision was made.
Right.
Like,
the Michaela blindside, yes, at the end of Game Changers in particular.
Yeah, that's definitely what it was. That's why I was confused about which season. but yeah, it's not fun just to be surprised for me. Like, it's fun to be surprised, but then, like, be able, at least have the faculties to piece it together.
Right. Right. Like, as I was getting to, like, it's fun on The Genius to be surprised knowing, oh my God, now they're going to break down how all of this really went. We're on Survivor. You're not going to get any whiff of how it really, you know, they're not going to get any, there's no coda to the story that's going to bring it all full circle.
Yeah. Also, JP had the confessional that's like, oh, we lost again, but losing doesn't even matter to me. Like, basically that I'm looking forward to tribal council confessional, which, like, is such an established kiss of death.
Right, right. And on the heels of JP saying this tribe would be completely screwed without me in the challenges. They'd never win anything. Everything was there. The same recipe they used in earnest the week before with Rourke, they now used like a bluff with JP.
Yeah, and the fact that that confessional that JP had about like, oh, everybody would lose without me had already been said like basically verbatim by Cole earlier, mm-hmm. who they were also trying to bury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, do you feel like, not just this episode, but do you think that with it now, I guess, in the books, was this a good pre-merge? Has this been a good season so far for you?
I am not as high on this season as a lot of other people are. I'm definitely not like out on it in any way. Like, I'm enjoying it. I think I'm just a little disappointed. I think that I thought based on like pre-merge coverage and pre-game coverage and interviews and stuff like that, that I would find myself connecting with a lot more of these characters, but I'm actually finding it hard to find people to root for. At the same time, there aren't very many people that I can root against, which is good because I don't really enjoy that sensation. Like I want everybody to be someone that I would be happy winning. But right now I'm really only actively rooting against like one or two people, but at the same time, my heart is really only totally in it for one or two people, and everybody else is just kind of like, okay, like this is fine. I hope some people come out of their shell more. And I don't know if that's a consequence of the gameplay or the editing or whatever, but I feel like I was really high on this cast, and it hasn't really gone as thrillingly as I thought it would.
Yeah, I came into the like premiere recap episode we did really optimistic, thinking, oh, I was totally underselling how good this cast was going to be. And I do think they still have a lot of interesting characters, but I'm with you where, for whatever reason, while I can appreciate that it is an interesting mix of people out there, I just don't find myself caring too much about any of them. This season, like, I'm not strongly rooting for pretty much anyone at this point. There are people I like more than certain others, and I do look forward to what I think and hope will be an interesting merge, but I'm still waiting for someone to like really capture my rooting interests. And I don't know if I'm if you and I are necessarily alone there. I'm not sure if there's anyone who's really jumping out. Maybe it's our demographic, but I think the big people that are the fan favorites this season are probably like Chrissy and Ben and maybe Ryan. And at least for me, I do certainly like, I'm fascinated to see where all of them go. And I love Chrissy being a fan of the aforementioned genius. And I do think that there's a lot of potential there still for all of them for sure. But at this point, there's no one like a Tony or like an Aubrey or whatever that I'm really strongly rooting for.
Yeah, I am all in on Chrissy, but at the same time, I feel like if there was a field where there were more people that I was rooting for, like Millennials versus Gen X, my heart was all over the place. I was like, I love Michaela, I love Jay, I love Adam. Like, it was somebody different every week. And I feel like if there were more people like that, then maybe I wouldn't be so in on Chrissy, just because she hasn't really done anything that's like that spectacular. But she's just the one person that really jumps out at me. And even like, I feel like among my Survivor friends, like certain people I always have the same opinions as. And even now, like Chrissy is kind of divisive amongst my group of friends. And like, that doesn't usually happen. So there's really no one that's just like a total yes queen. But at the same time, I think that some of the people that for me personally, I would have been really invested in were cut down super early, like pregame. Loved Simone. I loved everything she had to say. I think that Katrina would have been really good TV. She got to go a little further. So it might just be a consequence of like the characters that I'm generally attracted to. And even Allie, like, I didn't think she was a very great player, but she's someone that if she had come into her own a little bit more, I think I would have enjoyed seeing. But yeah, I think it's just unfortunate that.
Yeah. I think you're totally right about that. Allie, and any regular podcast listener also knows, I really liked Rourke. I think she had a lot of potential. And I think I would be with you, though. I would say probably at this point, my favorite would be Chrissy. And maybe even after this last episode, though, maybe Dr. Mike, I'm really coming around to as well. And as well as it seems like perhaps his new almost partner in crime, Jessica. I'm really liking that kind of duo and hope to see them go far. But I really want to put out there again, I still think there's plenty of time for some of these people to emerge and become people that I do find myself really rooting for come finale time or whatever. But at this point, and maybe it's because the edit has been more balanced and we aren't getting just beaten over the head with the people they want us to like. But at this point, I'm still probably, I would say, reserving judgment on a lot of the people that are still there at the merge.
Yeah, I'm looking for any excuse to love Desi. Like, my normal neutral setting right now is like, I love Desi, but I can't point to anything. So I'm hoping that she's just someone that there are just people that either from the pregame or just from what little I've seen, I'm just like very drawn towards her. And I feel like she could have a lot to offer, but she hasn't done anything to give me any real reason to latch onto her. So I'm hoping that she's one of those people who comes into her own.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who could fit that bill. Like, I think there's a lot of candidates to be sneaky, really fun, fan favorite players after the merge. And I know I just mentioned Jessica. I think Ashley could be in that same camp too. These people that we've seen a decent amount from, and it's all been pretty good, and they've been likable and doing well at the game. I certainly could see timelines where either one of them goes on to, now that they're at every single tribal council and a part of every single vote, become a lot bigger player and a lot bigger character.
Does Ashley seem likable?
I think so. Do you not like Ashley?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, shots fired at Ashley. But
I just think that, I don't know, anyone who's that drawn to JP right from the start, like, it makes me worried for their judge of character. But also, I don't know, I feel like the Alan situation was obviously like a crazy thing to be lobbed at you right at the beginning of the game, but I don't think that she handled it with a lot of poise, and it just made me kind of look at JP and Ashley as this pair that's just like not super amenable to different people. And she just seemed very I don't know, standoffish and kind of snobby. Just not my fave.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to be a really interesting dynamic now that she and JP are both going to be at that merge. But on this new blue tribe after the swap, when they got swapped apart, it really seems like she and Devin have become a really tight duo, potentially to the point that if they had gone to another tribal council, they would have like gone to rocks for each other. And that is certainly a pairing that I'm going to have my eye on at the merge. And as mentioned, in particular, to see how JP fits into there. If she tries to bring him in and they become a trio, I could see that being a group that would potentially just get along well together and feel comfortable working with each other within the game. I don't know where Desi fits into that, but maybe that could be where we see Desi fit in. We've only really heard on this blue tribe about Joe finding idols and sketching people out and the other three not really being into that. So if we're trying to find a spot where maybe Desi could come into a little bit more of a power situation post-merge, maybe it could still be with Ashley and Devin and people from this tribe.
Yeah, Desi also has the opportunity, though, to get back together with Jessica and Mike, who have an idol. So that's another slot that she could fit back into. And if they're willing to go forward with Cole for a little bit longer, then that's, you know, that healer alliance is very powerful. And I feel like, and those aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, the three that you just mentioned, JP, Ashley, and Devin, could easily get together with them as well, because the healers and those people know that Joe is a threat and that he might have another idol, and that's something that they have in common as an enemy. So I could definitely see that happening as well.
Yeah, where do you feel like Joe fits in within this group? Because it does, I did not get the picture that any of them were too thrilled about the prospect of working with Joe going forward. Even, you know, they don't know that he has the idol, but I don't think much is going to change that now that we're at the merge. And I did, you know, we have Joe, who now picks up his second idol of the game, and when he finds it, he says it's the middle of the night, he goes and finds the idol, and this is just my own speculation, but he said they leave in a quote of him saying, if I make it to the merge, guess what? I'm going to find a third idol. I can't imagine why they would leave that in if he didn't go and do that. It seems like the stupidest thing to do, to leave that in. If he does it, it would seem so weird if anyone ever rewatches this season and knows that he doesn't go on to find that third idol. Why would you ever leave that in? So I feel like Joe is going to be someone who's in there mixing it up and making himself a presence within the game at the merge, but I don't know who's in there even looking to work with him.
Yeah, I think that Joe is gonna get to the merge. I mean, obviously he got to the merge. I think he's going to get there, and I'm sure he'll play that idol correctly. Probably not too far down the line. I think he's going to save himself again. And maybe find that third idol. I think you're right. That's a good point. But I don't think that Joe can do, I don't see him as a player who's capable of doing much more than saving himself with idols a bunch of times. And that doesn't make you a great Survivor player. I think that does make you someone who, if he does somehow manage to make it to the final three, then those are like big moves, TM, that maybe will get him some votes. But I don't really see him getting there because I don't see Joe as a very smart player or person, really. I don't see any evidence there. I mean, the fact that he didn't immediately know to go look in the exact same spot, that he had to like see that clue for the idol, like even Jessica knew at her new tribe, like exactly where the idol was going to be. And I don't see her as the brightest player. Like, and he wouldn't have found that idol originally if Cole hadn't pointed it out to him. Like, I don't think he's someone who's going to be able to do any puzzles and challenges or really put two and two together strategically very often. So I think in Joe's position, the move would be to try to pick up the stragglers at the merge and form an alliance that way. You know, kind of get all the mercenaries together. But I don't know that he has that sort of game sense about him. I think that he'll probably just like try to get back in with the healers or something, or try to backstab someone just for the sake of it, because that's the kind of player that he seems to aspire to be. But I don't really see Joe pulling off any sort of great strategy to get him further in this game without any strong allies currently.
Right. And you know, the obvious comparisons are to Tony and Russell, who played these like super aggressive idol centric games, but it certainly is worth noting that they had loyal allies in their corner the entire time that they were doing that. And if you want to play this kind of style of cause a bunch of chaos and make everyone uncomfortable and feel like, you know, with this much uncertainty, I guess for tonight, I got to go with Tony's plan or go with Russell's plan. That's not going to work for Joe if he doesn't have anyone else voting on his side to make the numbers more threatening. Joe might be maybe the most interesting person for me, now that I think about it, entering this merge as far as where he ends up landing, because it seems like he could be a really interesting person to bring into an alliance if you're willing to risk giving Joe any kind of useful information, especially if you somehow knew that he had an idol or maybe two going forward. That is definitely someone you want on your side, but it really doesn't seem like he's done a great job of making anyone even remotely interested in that, as far as I can tell. It seems like Joe is probably going to get to the merge and be on the lookout for any friend he can find.
Yeah, I think what's going to be really key in assessing Joe's game is seeing if he can handle damage control, like if that's a skill that he has, because he's only been to one tribal council so far. So we haven't seen him. We haven't seen anyone get mad at him yet. So I think that's going to be essential, because that was really what was so key to Tony's game, was being able to burn people and then have them forgive him.
Yeah. And I guess to kind of just wrap on this post-swap blue tribe a bit, where are you on Devin at this point? I know he's been someone Devin might be like the highest variance person of the season as far as the range of opinions I've heard on him.
Yeah, people love him. There are people who like see something in him as a player that I just do not see at all. Like I don't have any problem with him. I'm just like, to me, he seems of the like Cole, JP, him trio, which are all kind of the same type of player to me. He seems like the one with the most potential, but I haven't really seen any personality from Devin, and you know, certainly more game sense than Cole or JP, but really nothing to point to as spectacular.
I have such a hard time just in general, I think, seeing a ton of upside in Devin, but it might just be my own bias against his voice, right? His speaking voice, like you were saying, like the personality just doesn't resonate with me. It just doesn't sound, he doesn't come across to me like someone who I feel like I've ever really seen win Survivor before, frankly. Like, he doesn't speak with the confidence that I think is generally required to be successful in this kind of game.
Yeah, have you ever seen the Californian skit on SNL?
Of course, yeah. That is spot on.
Yeah, every time he talks, every time he has a confessional, my mom and I go, Devin, what are you doing here? Because he's just totally like California, like just does not seem I'm sure he is interested in what he's talking about. He just doesn't come off as though he is. So I want to see Devin get himself in more sticky situations to see like how he actually plays. But for now, I don't really see any evidence to indicate him being any sort of super dangerous player.
Right. I mean, the thing is, you can certainly win Survivor without playing a stellar game of Survivor. I don't want to rule Devin out entirely. It just, for whatever reason, he strikes me as someone just when he speaks, I just don't hear any like substance to the things that he's saying. And I think that really does matter when you're hanging out with people 24/7 for 39 days.
Yeah, and he gets so few confessionals. Like, if he was super charismatic, I think that they would put him in there just because, I mean, he's great to look at. And if he was saying anything that was really, even if it wasn't strategic, if it was just, like, fun, that they would show him more.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't seem like he's cutting a lot of goofy, hilarious confessionals that are just ending up on the editing room floor. It seems like they're putting him in, and maybe even any chance they can find a way to put him in.
Yeah, but it's so minimal. Like, he gets one confessional maybe per episode.
Right. But I think they would maybe argue, like, we're doing what we can with what he's giving us.
Oh, yeah, we're doing the best we can. Maybe he's going to be the winner, and they're just like, we literally cannot show you more than this. It's just, like, him sitting in silence.
Yeah, well, I want to, because I did get an email. We got an email. Who was this email from this week? This email was from Damien. I believe it was from, who is one of the, was one of the like original like EDGIC developers back during like Survivor Thailand, apparently. And he was giving us some feedback on some of our edit takes that we'd have. And his overwhelming feedback, though, was that we were way too low on Devin. And as someone, you know, I believe this guy as someone who has been in the EDGIC game far, far, far longer than I have. And he is not alone in being someone that I've heard have some support for Devin as a potential winner. So for the time being, Devin is definitely still in there for me. But I really feel like I'm going to need to start seeing more from Devin to keep that a serious consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can point to, like, what do we know? That he was willing to go to Rocks with Ashley, maybe, but that's not even proven. Like, other than that, really, what have we seen from his game?
Yeah.
He didn't even get to vote in the last tribal council. Like, we haven't seen him play in a very long time.
Yeah, did he? Yeah, I guess he would have. He went to a pre-swap vote, but it is funny. Devin, I'm curious to see where he fits in at the merge as well. But I would guess that, as we were talking about with Ashley, that those two stay tight. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, at this point, what other options are there? Get back together with the Hustlers, who at this point are like, what, Ryan and who else is left from the Hustlers?
Yeah, Ryan, Allie's gone. Lauren, of course, Lauren.
Yeah.
How could you not get that dream team back together? Ryan,
sure,
Devin, and Lauren.
I don't think that trifecta, that triforce is really going to like come into play too much after the merge. I don't really know if those three ever had any kind of working relationship game-wise. So, yeah, I think he's definitely going to stick with Ashley.
Yeah, I hadn't done the math on that, that those are the only three Hustlers who made it to the merge. And it seems like, I mean, they're not going to come together. So we don't even have really a Matsing tribe, I would say. Like, those three aren't going to come together and pose a serious threat that people are going to be worried about, is what I mean. Where,
come on, name a more iconic trio. I'll wait.
Well, it's interesting that typically in these three tribe games, Dom and I will always endorse being the team at the merge with the staggeringly fewest numbers. Like, that's where you want to be, is being in that Matsing position. And it seems like it could be the Hustlers, but it doesn't sound to me, or it doesn't seem to me, I guess, like that is probably going to emerge into a situation where they three feel good about their ability to keep flipping the game back and forth and run it all the way to the end together.
Yeah, it's also hard when one tribe has four people and one tribe has three people. Like, I feel like the intentional Matsing works when, like you said, you have staggeringly fewer numbers. Right. But I think the Heroes 4 is a lot more dangerous than the Hustlers 3.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's get into, before we get into those two tribes, I really do want to dive in a little bit on the healers, and that duo that I mentioned that I feel like over the course of the post-swap, we have seen Jessica's main ally, even though she's in this episode when Cole passes out talking about how she really likes him, and the week before this she was saying, I don't know, I don't think I could go on without Cole if he left this game anytime soon. I would say, though, that ever since the swap, she and Dr. Mike have been the people that I would say would be the more likely duo to emerge post-swap, just given the way that it seems like they've been presented. And also, I would say, the burial of Cole in this last episode, where it's not only this last episode, these last two, perhaps mostly at the hands of Lauren talking about his eating habits. But I would say he has been getting tanked lately, and these two have been really looking good. Where do you feel like the healers are going to be entering this merge, in particular those three?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you about the Jessica and Mike pairing. I am so out on Jessica, I just have to say. I am just very frustrated with, like, she knew where the idol was, and, like, it's fine for her to bring Dr. Mike with her, but just be like, there, dig, get it. Like, you could have gotten it, girl. Like, have an ounce of agency in this game. And then for her to give confessionals that are like, oh my God, I just, like, can't live without Cole in this game. Like, it's so frustrating for me to watch her have just absolutely no initiative in her own game. So unless, like, she gets to the merge and turns around and is like, you know what? I am a modern woman. I can do things by myself, which I don't think is going to happen. Like, I'm just totally out on Jessica. But anyway, yeah, I agree with you that she and Dr. Mike are going to stick together. I think they're going to stick with Cole for a little while longer. I don't think that Cole, I know he looks like a merge boot, but I think that this is all setting something up for a little bit later. So we're not sad when we lose him on some sort of, like, maybe some weird twisty tribal council or an idol or something like that. But I think that he's going to stay in their numbers for a little while. Like I said, potentially Desi will join back up with them. But I don't really see many of the, except for Joe, I don't really see the healers being in the crosshairs, especially if the Jessica and Mike contingent can sort of distance themselves from Joe, if maybe they can get some information from Desi that he is someone who looks really suspicious, or they can just kind of intuit that from, like, knowing Joe for a little while. I don't think they're going to be seen as too dangerous, because are there five or six healers left? Sorry,
there are,
I don't
five.
Have a list.
Rourke is now gone, but the other five are all there. It's a 5-4-3 split entering the merge, right? Yeah.
So I don't think it's exactly like a healer's monolith that everybody is going to be too worried about, or at least I don't think they should be. If all six of them were still intact, then maybe, but I don't think that people are going to see the healers as too dangerous. I think that they're going to be bigger targets. Maybe, like, Ryan is someone that I think could be at the center of a lot of controversy. Obviously Joe. But I think that all these healers kind of have the ability to lay low, because except for Joe, none of them are huge personalities. And the only thing that Cole is doing to get a target on his back is be really annoying, which is not really why you should vote someone out in season 35 of Survivor.
Yeah, well, I think the people are going to probably instinctively want to target the group that has the most numbers, but you're probably right in thinking about who these numbers actually are. I have a hard time seeing a healer other than Cole being the merge boot. And I say that because I'm assuming Joe would play the idol correctly if the votes came on him. And I don't feel like Dr. Mike and Jessica would be viewed as too big of a threat. Like, I think they're just too, as far as I can tell, just really likable people. They're not going to be viewed as challenge threats anytime soon, I would imagine. I don't think they're going to be viewed as, like, strategic powerhouses. I don't think Desi's going to get voted out. I would be floored if Desi was the merge boot. So I really would say Cole would be the only person that I would have my eye on there. And I think I would. I definitely do hear what you're saying about how Cole could be around to set up something later. But I think, gun to my head, I probably would pick Cole as the merge boot if I had to right now. Although I could see it, I think you are onto something, that it could potentially be Ryan. I think he would be certainly my number two, if not 1A there for that pick.
Yeah, the only way that I could see Jessica going out is sometimes when there are these massive numbers, when there's all these people at the merge and there's like kind of these giant voting blocks forming, sometimes people get nervous and they vote, they want to vote out like the right hand person of their target. So if they're like, if they see Joe, I mean, Cole as someone who is really smart or something like that, which I think he can come off that way. He hasn't obviously the last couple episodes, but I think he can give the impression that he's a smart guy. Certainly more than Jessica does. I think that they could be like, oh, well, if Cole has an idol, let's just cut off his right arm and get rid of Jessica here.
Yeah, that's certainly in play. Like, I think Jessica, it wouldn't floor me. And maybe I'm just like parakeeting here and I just am totally sold on the things that I've heard in the last 15 seconds. But now I think I'm talked into Jessica being my number three merge boot pick.
Okay, great.
So who's my number four, Alita? Who's
I'll just give you a whole list.
Yeah.
And then we can... like, you'll just tweet them all as separate tweets and then just delete them all except for the correct one.
That's not a bad strategy, yeah. I delete enough tweets anyway. Like, all right, we don't need to talk about that. I have a horrible Twitter. Okay. Along with Jessica, who apparently you're not feeling so much, are you feeling Dr. Mike?
Yeah, I am. It's so crazy to see someone like Dr. Mike out there, which I guess should make me more high on him. But I've never seen someone on Survivor who I just look at him and I'm like, that is literally any of my friends' dads, like growing up. Like, I guess I don't have verification that Dr. Mike is Jewish, but like probably, right? Yeah, maybe.
I would feel pretty comfortable betting yes.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's just so weird to see someone who's just like all of my like friends from Hebrew school's dads. Like, they're just out there on Survivor. Like, you see dad characters, but he's not even a dad character. He's not fatherly. He's just like just kind of this older Jewish guy with this job that you don't see too often. And, you know, urologist, not doctor. We do see doctors out there, but so I guess that should make me more high on him because I like archetypes that are not represented too often. And I think the thing that I like the most about Dr. Mike is that you could see him fitting in to sort of like a Dave Wright archetype, but I feel like he doesn't. Like, I feel like there's something more confident about him. He's certainly very secure in his own intelligence, to the point where even in pregame, he came off a little bit cocky. And so I don't think we're going to see the, you know, the sort of like gentle harp music in the background as he learns that he actually can be in the outdoors. And certainly we see the moments of like, oh, he caught a fish, but then he immediately loses it in the fire. Like, we see those dorky moments, but I'm glad that we're not going to have to see that sort of coming of age trope that I think we're going to use on Ryan here, maybe. But Ryan is also very confident. He's a little cocky. Like, he's self-deprecating, but I think that he has a lot of confidence. So
yeah.
I'm glad that we're not going to see that over and over again.
Yeah. I basically tuned out of watching televised poker for years and years and years, but I did watch the final table of this year's World Series of Poker main event, and there was this guy on there. I think his last name was Hesp, H-E-S-P. I think his name was John Hesp. Who was this British amateur player that had absolutely no business being there, but like over the course of the tournament had become this overwhelming fan favorite. And it wasn't out of like pity or whatever. It was people just had a fun time rooting for this guy because he was clearly out there feeling really happy and feeling on like day three, like it was already just a free roll for him, like total gravy. He's already massively exceeded all of his expectations. And I could see Dr. Mike being that kind of character on this season where, unlike the David Wright kind of coming of age story, I think you're right. I think that Dr. Mike has just that more confident demeanor. Like, he's an MD, where I think Survivor for him, he is almost exclusively out there for like the adventure and to get a chance to like play this game that he's always loved. And if he's now that he's out there at the merge, I think this is like John Hesp getting into the money in the World Series of Poker main event, where he's like, okay, everything from this point forward is just icing on the cake. And I think that makes for a really easily rootable guy and definitely a potential winner.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's holding me back from Dr. Mike, and if I say anything on this podcast that's going to get backlash, it's going to be this, but I do have a hard time rooting for people that have kind of had every opportunity in life, if that makes sense. this guy who had an Ivy League education, who has this great job with all this money and, you know, this great family. I'm sure he's endured hardships, but Survivor to me is a game where anyone could win no matter what your story is, your story. And it's kind of hard for me to be like, yeah, I want the probably already millionaire to win. And that's like the most old school Survivor thing about me is that when I watch Survivor and Big Brother, like I think about if I were on the jury, like I feel like I would take it into account, not necessarily like need, but just sort of like you have to think about the fact that like I can't disconnect the fact that it is real money that is going to impact real lives. So like I would probably factor in who I want to have $1 million more. So I know that they're trying to present him as an underdog, but I kind of can't think of him as too much of an underdog, which is not to say like, oh, I would be so mad if he won because he already has money, because obviously people who already have money win all the time. It's just something that stops me from being like totally in on him.
Right. I totally hear what you're saying about that, that it does when the $1 million, which would be probably life-changing money for literally any other member of the cast, I would guess, mm-hmm. goes to the guy who's never going to have to worry about money in all realistic terms. That is, at the very least, a weird thing to see happen. But I do feel like over the course of those 39 days, people, especially when they're jurors who are potentially angry at certain people or really big fans of certain people, that plays, as far as I've ever heard, basically no role for anyone ever as far as how they cast jury votes there. And I totally agree that your take on that, as just viewers of the show and people who are watching these people we've never met before win or not win $1 million, that definitely... again, feels just weird seeing potentially that go to someone like Dr. Mike compared to pretty much anyone else. But I do feel like the game does a good job. And I think I would be in general for the game doing a good job at removing that kind of thought process from the people who are actually casting the votes. Like I don't want to say that the money shouldn't matter to them, that like they should never take into consideration who needs the money. But I think it becomes a quick problem if that ever becomes like an actual piece of criteria.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's like the most just old school, yeah. Potentially like casual opinion that I
no,
have.
No, no, no. I mean,
that, like...
we used to see back in the day, and maybe this is a counterpoint to what I was just saying, but one of the standard early jury questions was, what are you going to use the money on?
Yeah. And I think about this all the time when people talk about like, you know, bitter juries is obviously a big conversation in the wake of BB19 and Karong and everything. I just think about like if I were there, like the whole point is that you can't tell anybody how to vote or like why they should vote. There are no rules. Like Jeff Probst tried to do it last season where it's like now you have to, you know, the question process is different. You have to explain why you outplayed out. Like, no, you don't. You can vote for literally whatever reason. And like if money factors into it, like I think you're right that if that became some massive factor, then that wouldn't be fair because then you would have an inherent advantage in Survivor or disadvantage if people didn't want to get you to the end if you had like a more difficult background. But I think that like you can't get inside the heads of the people who have just been through this like harrowing journey at like whatever they want to factor into it, considering that it is real money and real lives. Like, yeah. It's fine.
Right. Well, and it's also like, hey, I just spent 30 whatever days out here with this person. I'm going to vote how I want to vote. You don't
right,
get to
exactly.
tell me how to vote. I'd actually forgotten. And now am not looking forward to that process all over again, that Jeff really moderated the final tribal council and you know, put his hands on it way more than he ever had before last season.
Yeah, he was a little burnt up about that Karong finale.
I believe he said that's going to be the new thing going forward, is that's how it's going to work.
I actually didn't hate it as much as like a lot of people did. I thought it was fine, but I can see Jeff getting even more. It's okay for me, but I would so much rather it just have not happened at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, I believe my take on it was, I thought it was great for this cast, and they got a good jury dynamic and a good mix of people to be speaking up, a couple people speaking up for both Brad and Sarah. But if you do not have a relatively split jury vote, this is going to be a disaster if it's just 10 people talking amongst themselves about how one person's obviously going to win.
Yeah, and it also maybe didn't bother me so much because I didn't care who won that season. Like, I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. Brad, Sarah, Troy's, who cares? Like, I hate all of those people so much. But I think if there was someone that, like, I had really been pulling for, then I may have, like, tuned in more to be like, how is the narrative really being shaped here against or for someone?
Yeah. So definitely not, as I said, not looking forward to that final tribal council now that I've been reminded of it. So I guess let's move over to someone that are you rooting as hard for this person as it sounds to me like most people are? And he's had a big couple of weeks. Where are you on Ben at this point?
I am certainly in on Ben, but I think the problem that I'm having, and like I said at the top of the show, there's really no one that I'm really rooting for. So sorry if I'm sounding like super overly critical of everyone, but I'm just trying to explain why I'm not as in on them.
You came to the right podcast to be super overly critical of everyone.
I think my issue with Ben is that I don't really have a firm grasp on who he is. Like, I'm glad that we got like a big character scene from him. I'm glad we're getting more character moments this season in general. But I am glad we got that scene. I'm always happy when people are out there kind of promoting a cause, especially something that is as stigmatized as mental health or something like that. And so I'm happy that he's out there for that reason, but I don't really know who he is beyond just like what he's been through. Like, I know that he had these difficulties in the military. I know that he has a family, but other than that, like, I couldn't tell you a personality trait about Ben. Like, maybe he seems fun. Like, that's probably accurate. But other than that, like, I don't understand who he is or what he's really about, so it's hard for me to root for him.
I think Ben and his accent and his cowboy hat do a lot of his talking about his personality for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, see, that's not a personality to me.
Right, but I think for the viewers, that's the takeaway for them.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Is that like, oh, like they're telegraphed that he's a cowboy type, and so that's like a type of person, but that just like doesn't signal anything to me that like matters.
I'm with you. I think that's totally fair. I think it is the funniest thing in the world that every single pop country singer that's a guy has to wear the cowboy hat at all time to like fit into that aesthetic. That's like across the board. But I think that is just what they're going for. It's like, hey, this is what it is.
Yeah, and I've liked cowboy characters before. I've hated cowboy characters before. I have liked and hated them if they're Colby, depending on the season.
When did you hate Colby?
All Stars.
Oh, come on. He was doing shit commercials during All Stars. He was Hollywood.
He was being homophobic during All Stars.
Oh, true.
That's what
okay,
was happening.
Fair.
also, keeping in mind, Jerry Manthe is my favorite Survivor player of all time. Mm. So, but
she,
yeah,
by the way, the true robbed goddess of Heroes versus Villains. She wins if she gets there instead of Sandra. She got voted out because she was a bigger jury threat than Sandra.
I love her. She's perfect. And that's actually, I feel like, a little bit of a hot take. There's a lot of disagreement about whether or not Jerry would have won.
I don't know. I don't think there's much disagreement if you ask the Heroes tribe, who were never, ever voting for Barbity and Russell.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like they did it on the evolution of strategy, though. Like, they went through all the votes and, like, they're like, oh, we don't know. It's too close to call. We don't know.
A dead body gets the Heroes votes over Russell and Barbity.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. I mean, I'm obviously with you. I'm like, yeah, Jerry would have won every season. She made it to the end. She would have really changed the game if she had won Australia. That would have been amazing.
That would have been incredible. And it's so funny. I know we're the millionth people to give this take that, like, on Australia, like, by modern standards, Jerry is so tame with the villainy.
Yeah, and Colby's the villain on Australia.
Yeah. I think 30 million Americans agree with you on that one.
Yeah. So the cowboy hat doesn't really do anything for me. I definitely am in on Ben. Just he seems like a nice guy, and he's with Chrissy, and so I'm definitely rooting for that duo. But I do hope we get to see more from Ben, like particularly seeing him interact with other people is something I feel like we haven't really seen. So I would like to see some of that social game from him.
Right. That's the thing is, ever since the swap, it seemed like, you know, on his original Heroes tribe, he was just by default going to be on whatever alliance emerged with that mix of people. And then after the swap, they never ended up having to go to a vote. And I don't think he probably would have left even if they had, unless people were playing really hard in anticipation of a merge. But it seems like we've seen him on this new tribe only really bond with Mike and Lauren, which makes me a little nervous about that relationship with Jess. But it seems like he is potentially someone who could be one of the people spearheading this anti-coal movement that I could potentially see happening here at this merge. We got clips of him talking, I think, both with Lauren and with Dr. Mike about how coal is such a liability and he's got to go as soon as they get a chance.
Yeah, but I wonder if he actually has a problem with Cole, or if he's just like, I just don't want it to be me, because I'm
that's true. He could feel like, hey, I got to do some quick work here to make sure that me, the obvious physical threat in a 3-1-1 dynamic with the merge right around the corner, is not the one to leave if we lose this next challenge. That's also definitely in play.
Yeah, so I do want to see more of that interaction. And I also just want to see like where his head is at strategically, because like you said, we just only know him as like being automatically in whatever alliance is happening.
Yeah.
Which does speak to his social game for sure. Like, I believe that he has one. I just want to see him interacting with other people more.
Well, the good news for you is I believe we will get that opportunity. It seems like Ben has become one of the main characters on this season. So I'm guessing Wednesday is going to be a big night for him.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's a big night for the Chrissy and Ben duo.
I do feel like that is going to be where this goes for Ben, is linking back up with Chrissy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think that Chrissy, Ryan, and Ben for sure. And then there are any number of people who could kind of make sense latching onto that.
Yeah, it is going to, I think you are right that we're going to see, I'm anticipating seeing a lot of just small clusters of two and three people, like this Mike and Jess pair with maybe Cole in there, this Devin and Ashley pair with maybe Desi in there, or whatever, this Ben and Chrissy pair. Excuse me, with maybe Ryan in there, and it's going to just be a big smattering of all these little micro alliances that somehow have to come together to get 7 votes out of 12. I think it's going to be a really, really exciting episode with a lot of just total madness going on. And I'm guessing it's going to be another one of these episodes where they could have a 3-hour time slot and they would not be able to adequately tell the story of how everything happened.
Yeah, lots of secret scenes, please.
Yeah.
I just one more note about the Ben and Chrissy thing. I just don't think it would have made sense to dedicate so much of one of those pre-swap episodes to Chrissy being like, okay, I need to find a buddy, and Alan is too crazy, and Ashley and JP are too paired, or JP is too dumb, or whatever her thing was. I compared it in my recap to Goldilocks and the three alliance mates, where she's like, this one's too dumb, this one's too erratic, like, this one's just right, like, settling in with Ben as, like, her buddy, and it didn't really come too much into play. Like, they didn't need to show us that for that vote that night. They just, like, you know, they voted together, but that would have made sense if we hadn't had that scene. So I think they were setting that up for a reconnection, which is the only thing that was keeping me sane during that Rourke Chrissy vote, when I really didn't want Chrissy to go home. It's like, this showed us so much that's setting up for later. She can't go home.
Yeah. Now that you put it in those terms, I think, Ben, the comparison that I would make at this point, and I know maybe this is a big name to throw out there, given this person is a winner and it's someone generally very respected in his winning game. But I think Ben is playing kind of the Jeremy Collins game, where he's getting away with being such a big threat because he is so likable and people feel like he's the one who's just right in a world where everyone else is so crazy.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, especially because he does seem like the type of person to be able to calm people down if they're feeling paranoid. And he also doesn't really come off as too much of a strategic threat just because of that cowboy hat. I think people don't look at that and think like that's like a really sharp person necessarily.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Ben is certainly doing a good job keeping his presence disarming to this point, and I still think the sky's the limit as far as I can tell for Ben and how this season might go for him. Where are you on Lauren, the last person on this tribe, who I think could low-key be one of the most interesting people of this post-merge, now that she's made it there?
Yeah, Lauren is so fun. Like, we don't get too much from her, but she's always saying something funny. And I don't know if that's a coincidence that she's just, like, the snarkiest person there, or if, like, we're just supposed to kind of be already liking her or something. But, I'm in on Lauren. I don't really see her path to the end too much, just because she's a little bit of that sob story, you know, single mother, doesn't come from wealth. And older women generally don't fare too well at that final if they do get there. So I think that it could be a combination depending on how she plays it at the merge of, like, either people don't want her to get there, or, like, she'll get there but people won't see her as someone who had a lot of agency in the game. Because I can see her being someone who comes into her own and starts calling some of the shots. But I feel like she is one of those people who's, like, kind of just going to vote with whoever is annoying her most or something like that. So I don't really know what's going to, I can see it going a lot of different ways with Lauren, but for now I'm really liking her.
Yeah. I just have a hard time seeing how Lauren is getting voted out certainly anytime soon. And I would be comfortable. I think I said last week, like, if I think Lauren could easily be a losing finalist here. We've seen, I think, people in this type before who are out there really eager to play and who are not being viewed as big threats, and I think are probably being viewed as relatively beatable in the end, end up playing major roles in how these seasons play out. Most recently on Australian Survivor Season 2, I think the same thing, something similar may have just happened there. Or to use, like, Lil from The Outcast as another example of this, as someone who really wants to be in there making her mark, but who is not being viewed as, like, a serious threat by the rest of the people, can often be someone driving a lot of the action. And I think that is definitely in play for me with Lauren, and I would be totally here for that. I think, like I said, I think Lauren could be turn out to be one of the most exciting people, and end up being maybe like a critical swing vote, maybe even as soon as this week. I think the battle for Lauren's vote could be really fun.
I wonder if Lauren is Jane Bright if she wasn't such a bitter Betty.
Yeah, Jane's another good example of that. I mean, Jane's a horrible I'm just gonna put it out there, Jane is my least favorite Survivor player of all time. I don't know if you knew that, but no, nothing triggers me harder than the name Jane Bright.
I didn't know that, but I have heard so much Jane Bright hate that I've just stopped responding to it because I really like her.
I
don't think she's a good player, but I don't know. I enjoy her.
I think Jane Bright's attitude in over the course of Survivor Nicaragua is 100% of what I would show people. Like, do not be anything like this person.
I rewatched Nicaragua like last year. I hadn't done a rewatch in a long time of any season. I was just like, I don't really remember Nicaragua. And it was the longest slog of a rewatch I have ever done. I did not remember Nicaragua being that hard to watch.
The last time I rewatched Nicaragua was actually probably shortly after it aired, and I was in totally the same camp. It felt like the pre-merge felt like it lasted 14 episodes.
It's just like so many of these people are just terrible. They're just horrible to watch. But anyway, I think that whereas Jane and Lil and some of these older women archetypes seem to have a problem with the cutthroat nature, the deception, I don't think Lauren is going to have that problem at all. The thing that makes me liken her to Jane Bright is she is like this tough old broad character that is a mother but isn't really the mother figure. You know, she has Chrissy, Jane had Holly to kind of fill that role. She's definitely like a more rough and tough kind of woman, but at the same time still could be seen as having those sort of that kind of baggage that these older women have, where people are somehow like more offended when they're lied to by older women than other people. So I think that could be potentially a problem for her. But I don't see her kind of having that barrier with integrity as some of the other people in that archetype.
No, I totally am with you. And if it's not clear, I'm very excited about the prospect of Lauren being there post-merge. I'm really looking forward to Lauren in a post-merge dynamic.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So I guess let's go through. I know we've talked about them in passing already, but this tribe that went to Tribal Council, we only have Ryan, Chrissy, and JP coming out of them going to the merge here. But let's talk a little bit just through this alley vote, since I guess in order to get to the merge, we need to vote one more person out, and that's going to end up being Alley. We've talked just a little bit about the way the episode presented it, where it just seemed like a total smear campaign against JP, and then out of left field, the votes end up coming in against Alley, which, as mentioned, really shocked the hell out of me, because I was really thinking Alley, just her edit, made it look like she was going to be such a big character, and it seemed like everyone was so high on her. Were you really high on Allie entering this week?
Not on her chances of doing well in
the
game.
Okay, that's what I mean. Yeah, sorry. Of her chances of winning.
Yeah. No, I thought that she was one of the maybe five people that could be in contention for winning. So I guess in that way, like, I was considering her more than a lot of other people just because of her edit. But we've seen Allie make decisions that I don't think that great Survivor players make. And like you've said, like, you can win Survivor and not be a great Survivor player. So it's just based on her edit, I thought that she could still be in there. But just the fact that we saw so much of her during the Chrissy and Rourke vote talking about challenge performance when we're like obviously not far from the merge. This is like a swap tribe. Like, it just seemed like she was making decisions that weren't super thought through and didn't have the best strategic mind for the game. But like you said, it was shocking just because of her edit and how much we'd seen of her and how fun she was. And I was definitely like in on her as a character. I was excited to see more from her. She's kind of she's very different from, I think, I can't think of a good comparison for Allie, like for people who have played before. And I think that's a really, really good thing, especially to have in a young woman who often we get just kind of the same types of young women over and over again. But I didn't see her as someone who was super strategically minded.
Okay, I see. I'm with you that I don't know, good comparison jumps off the top of my head, but I would say she did seem at least interested in the strategy. Well, I totally am with you in questioning her execution. Like, I think getting back to camp after the Rourke vote and freaking out on everyone is not the call at all. It's
yes.
The opposite of what you want to do. And for like, furthermore, like Ryan, like needlessly lying to leave her in the dark makes also no sense. So it's under like her mistake is induced by another person's mistake. But at the same time, her that kind of response, I don't think this team threw this challenge, but I think they should have thrown this challenge to get rid of Allie to make sure that she, because it seems like she's making it clear, I'm going to be a problem for you come merge time. And there's only one more round that they can get rid of her. Like, I think while they didn't probably throw it, I think all three of them will benefit from the fact that they lost this challenge and were able to get rid of Allie.
Yeah, I totally agree. If Allie, and that's what I mean about just like, and I do think that she was very interested in the strategy of the game, and it's sad to lose her over someone like JP because she was playing really hard, and that's always better to see. Even if it's not good gameplay, it's always better to see some gameplay than none. But yeah, she totally burned herself. If she had gone back to camp and done the, wow, like, you guys got me, good move, and then talk to Ryan privately about it later and be like, you could have told me, like, I trust you, then it wouldn't have even made sense for Ryan to vote her out, I don't think. I think it would have been a lot more beneficial for him to keep her, but I think that she left him no choice.
Right, like, as I said, I think they should throw this challenge to make sure they can go get rid of her.
Yeah, so that was definitely on her. Agree that it also falls at the feet of Ryan, because just how could he not even attempt to get his two closest allies to talk to each other on a vote with only five people there? Like, you couldn't have at least attempted to get Chrissy and Allie together, because what, Allie's three-day alliance with Rourke is so tight.
Yeah, like, I mean, he seemed to frame it, at least to be fair to Ryan, the way he put it on in his confessional on the TV show is these two hate each other and will never work together, which I think in his mind is like, well, fuck me, I'm in a horrible spot now because it's just not going to happen.
I guess, but maybe we just didn't see enough evidence of that.
Yeah, we definitely did not see enough evidence of that, by the way.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that... for all his talk about his amazing social game, I don't know where it is, Ryan, if you can't even get your two allies to talk to each other.
Right, this amazing social game of having this woman trust you implicitly because you gave her the secret advantage on day one.
Yeah, and that whole secret advantage thing is so crazy to me because, like, it is very powerful, and now they have an actual alliance, but that was just, like, based on Chrissy vomiting at a challenge, right? Like,
oh, actually, fake news alert there. They did not get to see Chrissy puke at the challenge. That happened after the other teams left, apparently, according to, like, Josh Wigler interviews. So it really was apparently based on Ryan having a good vibe from Chrissy. And also, another fake news alert, a correction that I need to issue unrelated to this story. But I keep saying that Lauren is from Pennsylvania or Maryland.
She's from
North Carolina. Thank you. Yes.
You think people from Pennsylvania talk like that?
The O. Yes. Ian Terry has that same O. That the home.
Yeah. Okay. Because he has a Pittsburgh accent, but it's very different from a North Carolina.
No, she
accent.
Has that Maryland O. Is what she has that thing, that accent.
Okay, but she also has a Southern accent.
she as well has a Southern accent, but she also has that Maryland O.
Yes. No. Okay. That's fine. Yes. Ian Terry is from a part of Pittsburgh that has the Pittsburgh accent. I am not. Sadly.
Oh yeah, you're from Pittsburgh too. Yeah. Why don't you have that accent?
I'm from the city, and mostly people in the suburbs have the accent, and I don't. Particularly the northern suburbs, which is where Ian Terry is from.
Okay.
Not that I'm a stalker at all. I just happen to know where he went.
What's
to
Ian Terry's
school.
Home address?
That's for me to know. Okay. And don't really want to share it. It's my personal information. Anyway, what were we talking about before?
Fake news, Lauren. That's how it cuts.
Chrissy vomiting.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Thing.
Okay, that's actually very clutch information because I was thinking, like, in the future, because sometimes they reuse these advantages, like, if you're on the losing tribe, just, like, look as pathetic as possible at that first immunity challenge because then, like, you'll just have people competing, like, stumbling over one another to look the most pitiable. And then
right,
get...
yeah, you want to take it to, what's Sierra from, Sierra Reed is her name from Token Sheens, where she was, like, uh-huh. She had, like, a fever on the first day, she had, like, 103 degree temperature, like, be shivering and convulsing on the bus ride into your tribe camp if you really want to take it to the next level.
I mean, yeah, that actually does go back to Token Sheens, because they got an advantage by being the first ones voted out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they got to go back to camp. They got to skip the hike or whatever it was and just either look for an idol or have an advantage or whatever in building the shelter or something like that.
Were you a Sandy fan, the Jalapau woman who got to go do that?
You don't have to remind me who Sandy is.
I'm reminding the audience, Lita.
Oh, okay. Token Sheens, fun fact, number one favorite season ever.
It's certainly in my top five. We've always said it's one of the best seasons to start people on.
Yeah. So, and it's really the last, like, old school season.
Totally.
But I was a fan of Sandy. I'm pissed and calling Steven a little nerd. Oh my God. It's so great. I've searched the world for a Token Sheen's Timbira buff and they, like, don't exist.
Really?
It's like my favorite tribe ever.
They were Timbira, the Black Timbira coach tribe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Coach
yeah.
Tyson, Aaron Lobdell. It was a lineup.
Yeah, that was a murderer's row of apathetic comedy.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess parting thoughts on Allie. One thing I definitely want to ask you about is something I know you've written about before, and I'm curious if you think this ties into that, which is the lack of success being a very constant or certainly running theme for women of color pre-merge. Do you feel like that played a role here with Allie?
I think it's hard to say. It's hard to point to anything and be like, yes, this is what it was. But just given the amount of data that I've collected on the situation, it just isn't a coincidence. Like, you just can't say, like, oh, Black women are just worse at Survivor.
Right.
Like,
you are 100% correct. I've never put this out. I don't think I've ever, you know, talked about in great detail this kind of concept. We've talked about it just in broader terms. But as far as, like, the research you have done, you are absolutely right. There is, as actually our good friend at Spool of Lies, Amy, tweeted out after this episode, like, there is no way to talk honestly about Survivor in situations like this without acknowledging it.
Yeah, so I think that there is some phenomenon that's going on that Ali wasn't immune from. And that doesn't mean that there aren't coincidences. Like, sometimes this is just the best move. And, like we said, she sort of did force Ryan's hand here. But I think even if you just look at the way that Ryan spoke to Ali, to me was very unacceptable. Like, I know that he was being yelled at, but I would have, if I hadn't been yelling at him, I would have started. Just the way that he was speaking to her was so condescending. Just a total inability to, he was kind of speaking to her like she was a child who was just like not understanding what was going on and being super condescending. And I think that that's at least a gendered thing, if not a racialized thing as well. So I think that you can look at the biases of individual players like that. And then you can also just kind of look at the massive phenomenon that's happening, especially with Simone too earlier this season. Asian women in the last few seasons have been just massacred. Like, it no one makes the merge except for Natalie Anderson.
You tweeted out a stat. It was like one out of the last 10 Asian women have made the merge, and that was Natalie Anderson.
Yeah, and Shireen in Worlds Apart, but then Shireen goes out second in her next season.
Right.
So it's just something strange is happening where we've had an increase in the amount of Asian women who are cast. Millennials versus Gen X was historic, and there were three, and they went out like what, first, second, and fourth, like
something like that. Yeah,
it's so hard to think of this as you know. Just, oh, well, you know, I guess that if they were better players, they just would have survived. And that's true to an extent. But I think you have to also look at the greater phenomenon that are happening. So I'm sure that there, I mean, I, like I said, it's hard to point to any one thing here, but it's also not useful to just like totally disregard it. Be
right.
Like, well, we can't pinpoint a reason. And, you know, and I'm not speaking to you, just like speaking general to the audience, just because you can't pinpoint one thing doesn't mean it's not there.
Right. Totally. And I do think Ali, we have a coherent picture of how Ali might have played her way out and like things Ali did wrong that she could have been better. And I'm certainly not trying to suggest anything along the lines of like this was unfair to Ali in the sense that like she didn't deserve to get voted out or anything like that. But I do think it's just, and while I had you on, wanted to get into a little bit, I think it is so critical to at least acknowledge when in circumstances like this, that is always going to be something that is going to play just not only on Survivor, but just anywhere. And in particular on Survivor, I think, though, it is so ratcheted up and so noticeable because there are so many white people on Survivor.
Yeah. And it's so disappointing because Survivor does well to invest in diversity. That's great. But when they cast more diverse people, even just age diversity, with three women over 40 on this cast, which is amazing. One of them was voted out literally first. Like, it's hard because it sends the message that like, oh, well, it's not worth it to invest in the diversity of these people, even though seasons like Cook Islands and Fiji, which had that equal racial representation, even though they're kind of regarded as maybe lukewarm seasons, we got some incredible characters out of those seasons. We got Earl. Amazing winners.
You have also come to the right place if you want to praise Earl. This is the podcast for Earl praise.
It is disappointing when they do invest a little bit more in the diversity and it just doesn't pay off because those people get cut down so early. But I think in the case of Ali, it did pay off in that people will remember her. Definitely a player and definitely a character.
Yeah. And I want to say about Ali, I mentioned that, you know, she was for a lot of people in their top tier of candidates up until the point that she was voted out. And she was definitely in my top tier. I think I had her as my like clear number three ever since the premiere. And I think had she survived this episode entering the merge, she probably still would have been in that slot. And I want to say in a spot where I feel like we spend far more time berating the editors than giving them credit, I am so eternally grateful that they, even though Ali was someone who just went out in an unceremonious, unanimous vote pre-merge. She swapped poorly. That's it. They spent every episode, as far as I could tell, making her look like a legitimate winner candidate and really balancing their range as editors to make it unpredictable who the big power players are going to be. I think it is so crucial that this, not just this season, but all seasons going forward, have more people like Allie who look like possible winners up until the point that they are cut out, even if it's completely out of nowhere early on in the game. Like, yeah, Malcolm absolutely. Last season is another good example of this.
Yeah, totally. And those pre-merge characters, like, we've had some really amazing pre-merge characters in the past, and so I'm glad that they are kind of picking back up on, like, you can just, like, be sad when someone goes home. Like, you don't have to protect everyone from disappointment, which I think sometimes the editors are like, oh, we're just like not really going to show this person very much, or we're not going to make everybody root for them because they're going to go out early.
Right. I think they always for a long time would have thought, oh, we don't want to build Allie up because then people will just be mad when she gets voted out in this spot. And instead, what we saw is like people are like, oh, my God, what a crazy shock. This is the best episode of the season.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So with Allie gone now, we've talked about them again just in passing, but where do you feel like Ryan is going to have his priorities now entering this merge? Who's he going to be looking to link up with, presumably along with Chrissy and Ben, but like how are they going to pull in seven people here, do you think?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think JP and Ashley are potentially in that mix because of the JP Chrissy connection, and also that those three just voted together against Allie. I think that JP will probably feel some sort of loyalty towards them. And the fact that Ashley was willing to work with Alan, and like we actually saw that in practice that she voted with him, is significant to me, because if Ashley was willing to stick with Alan, who she like hated at the swap, I think that she definitely has that sort of tribal loyalty, or at least a go with what you know type of attitude, where she's like, you know, I think she'll be totally down to get back together with Chrissy. So I think that that could definitely fit in there. Then potentially, if they could pick up a couple other people just through that alliance to make seven, I'm not really sure who else would go there. What do you think? Are there a couple other people who fit in with that?
I mean, frankly, I'm just looking at this merge. I'm penciling in Ryan, Chrissy, and Ben as something, and I don't know who's going to be the leader of the opposition. Like, I would think that it would be Joe, but I just, as we talked about, I can't come up with who's actively even looking to work with Joe right now. So,
well, I think the other side would be that Mike, Jessica, Cole.
Well, I was wondering, are they the other side necessarily? Because that's what I was going to say, is there a chance that these people team up?
What's the connective tissue?
There is, I mean, just being people who end up hitting it off in a game that is otherwise filled with people like Joe. Maybe they don't connect as well. You know, Cole, things aren't going well with him somehow. Maybe, I guess that's not too consistent with Jess, but it seems like Mike wouldn't be too heartbroken if Cole ended up leaving. I guess what I'm getting at is I'm just not ruling out, at least, the possibility that the Ryan and Chrissy and Ben story could, if not now, eventually dovetail in with the Mike and Jess story.
Oh, totally. I mean, we've had merges where everybody votes for the same person, and that's possible, whether that's Cole or Joe who pulls an idol. That would be an exciting merge episode.
That would be if it's a unanimous vote on Joe, he pulls the idol, and he gets to single-handedly pick who leaves in a 1-0-0 merge vote. Nothing to like the 11th power merge vote.
Who's Joe going for then, just based on what we know now?
I it wouldn't shock me if he ended up going for Cole. Maybe this is the timeline where Cole is the merge boot. It's the 1-0-0-0-0-0-0 merge boot.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that would be exciting. I really am not a fan of Joe, but that would make good TV.
Yeah,
especially if he didn't shoot like Chrissy.
Yeah, I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but who, if you had to lock someone in as the merge boot, who are you picking? If it's not Cole, if it's maybe Ryan, is there anyone higher on your list than Ryan?
I'm not sure that it's going to be Ryan. I think that Ryan is the person that I can come up with the most scenarios for, but I think that just based on what we've seen, I feel like there's so much set up with Ryan that he's going to go pretty deep in the game. I actually think that it's possible that, well, like I said, I think Jessica is pretty up there just because we've seen people be paranoid about pairs already. But I also think it's possible that it's someone that we just like haven't seen much from. It could be like, you know, a JP that they have already set up for people to not like, or maybe like an Ashley or a Devin or something like that. I don't really know what the path is for that. I just think like if there are going to be, if we're not in the scenario where everybody just votes for Joe and there are warring alliances, I could see it being like a physical threat or just something like that, where it's like, we're just aiming for whoever is on the other side that we can take out, and someone who we don't think is going to have an idol who would be one of those people.
Yeah. JP and Cole, I think, are probably the top of the list on that in that department. I would probably still be rolling with Cole just because of the kind of setup it seems like we've gotten on him over these last couple episodes of annoying people and deteriorating physically and being such a big threat. I don't know how well, as I mentioned, Jessica might take that, but I could see her not having potentially a lot of say in how that goes, and then that may even be a good thing for her if it can minimize the target on she and Mike potentially going forward. Lita, any other merge calls or merge pairings you're interested, you know, people coming together that you are looking forward to finally seeing get to interact?
I'm looking forward to Devin and Ryan getting back together to see how that goes. We did mention the Devin, Lauren, Ryan thing doesn't make sense, but it's important to remember that Ryan and Devin are, or at least were, a tight pair.
Totally.
Pre-swap. So even though I'm not a huge fan of either of them, I do think it's an interesting dynamic, kind of the Steven and JT 2.0, as many people have pointed out, and seeing kind of where they go, and if maybe Devin gets either more strategic agency in that or decides potentially to cut Ryan. I think that would be a really interesting scenario if Devin's looking to have more strategic independence.
Yeah, I would say, kind of like the same way we opened the top of the show, I'm really looking forward to this merge and seeing how all of these people interact. And I'm almost glad that I don't have a big rooting interest for this one episode in particular, because I'm really looking forward to just getting to see all these pieces finally on the same board, moving around, and see how things actually start to play out now that they all do come together for the merge, where we will actually, Lita, be together in New York City, as I've mentioned. I think I've mentioned at the beginning of the show as well. Very excited to be watching all of this go down with like 500 other people.
Yes. Hashtag Kia merge.
Yeah. Very
it's real,
exciting
it's happening.
Stuff. Lita, I guess, give me, before we wrap up on Survivor, who's your winner pick for this season, if you've got one locked in at this point?
All right, we need to understand that I'm an emotional person, and I believe in following my heart, and we're going to go with Chrissy, because I think it's somewhat logical based on her gameplay and her edit, and also I love her. So,
okay. Yeah, cannot argue with any of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Lita, of course, you are on Twitter at Lita Tweeted. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of this show. I told Dom the last time I was on that I feel like you guys are a very socially responsible reality TV podcast, and that's important to me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that as well. Everyone who is interested in a little more edit discussion, as I mentioned, Dom is not around at this point in time, but I am going to, for the first time ever, Lita, not a big edgic person, and understandably, but I'm going to, by myself, try to figure out how to record something by myself, and then hopefully attach a bit of an edit zone quick hit to the end of this podcast. But until we get to that point, you can be following me on Twitter at Colin Stone. Once again, Lita is at Lita Tweeted. You can be following everything she's doing over at Reality TV Wrap-Ups. And Lita, once again, give people the link for where they can find your Survivor recaps.
It's myentertainmentworld.ca. It's
awesome.
It's a Canadian entertainment website. Also, I want to say, maybe, Colin, I would have been an edgic person. Maybe you could have converted me, except that the one time I trusted you this week with Allie, it's totally burned.
You switched over to the World Series Game 7?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. You know how much I love baseball.
Yeah.
No, I saw your tweet and I was like, well, you know, Colin's usually right about these things.
That is the biggest fake news of the podcast. So
never again.
All right. Well, Lita, I will be seeing you in a couple of days. So thank you once again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, everyone else, hopefully stick around for the edit zone. I guess if there's no time left on this podcast, I couldn't figure out how to do it myself. But stick around for that. And if you're going to be tuning out, thanks for listening this far. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Tune out now.
All right, gang. So here we are in the Edit Zone. Just me again. And first of all, I want to just begin by saying this is extraordinarily weird sitting here talking into a microphone to no one. Hopefully I can get used to it, but sorry if this is bad. I guess in advance, let's dive into things. And I think the place to get into it would be with the guy that I think has been number one for me for quite a while. If not the entire time, maybe I had Chrissy above him a week or two in there somewhere. Who remembers at this point? I am, of course, talking about Ben. And the place to begin probably is actually with a lot of feedback that we got to last week's Edit Zone, where we... in retrospect, probably were a little high on what that PTSD scene meant in terms of Ben's winner chances. We probably had 10, 15 people either email in or tweet at us that we were really overreacting and that probably would have been left in anyway, which I think I partially agree with. I agree, certainly, that we were overreacting, first of all, that does not necessarily mean that Ben wins. The fact that they decided to include that is obviously going to be riveting stuff pretty much no matter what, but I don't know if it's in realistic terms actually no matter what. I don't think that the people who said we were too high on Ben are necessarily correct in thinking that makes the show regardless of how Ben does. For instance, and I'll get more into this email later, but Damien, who I've already referenced earlier, the guy who was one of the early Edgic people, the bulk of his email was actually not about us sleeping on Devin, but was about us being way too high on Ben, and that Ben could even leave as easily as like next week under certain circumstances, and that I, you know, this could be potentially for sure the third season in a row that I, Colin Stone, end up falling for the alpha guy who they just make look really good but does not end up winning, following, of course, on the heels of Ken and Brad Culpepper. But I do think, to go back to it, that this would definitely be included whether he wins, whether he is that losing finalist that they want to make look compelling, whether he's the bubble guy, whether he goes out under weird circumstances because of an idol and gets screwed out of a good position. I think there are a ton of non-winner scenarios for sure where Ben does end up getting that PTSD scene. So I do want to just go back. I think the people who got at us were totally right that we did overreact a little bit to that. But Ben this week, I would say, continues to just look really good for me, which is in his shoes, given that his team doesn't go to Tribal Council. He gets a lot of positive visibility. We get him being shown as liked and scheming with Dr. Mike and talking to Lauren. And meanwhile, Cole, who also doesn't go to Tribal Council on this team, is the one who's really getting buried here. And they make it look like Cole would be the one who would leave in the event that this team had lost, where I would suspect they probably could have had some confessionals if they'd wanted to include them about how much of a juicy target Ben might be looking to certain people under the right conditions here, and none of those end up making the show. And I also actually want to give a shout out to Eddie, by the way, who I forgot to mention, who also emailed in about the Ben PTSD scene, and who I will also be bringing up later, both Damien and Eddie, with some very good edgic emails this week. And of course, if you want to be emailing us, it is domandcolin@gmail.com. But Eddie was also on that same train that we were perhaps a bit high on Ben after the PTSD thing, where he realistically doesn't change too much, I would say, about his edit about his winner edit chances. But to go back to it, I just really continue believing that they are force feeding us Ben, it seems, about as often as possible, and making him look about as good as possible, or at least as good as I can imagine them making him look. Other than the people around him looking a lot better, I don't see a huge difference between the Ben edit and like the Mike Holloway edit at a certain point, where it really does just feel like even the stuff that might not be the best call, like going to Mike and talking about how they need to get rid of Cole before they've even gone and lost a vote. Like, why put it out there that you're going after Cole, especially when he has two people from his original tribe on this team in the event that you do go to a vote? It seems like the editors used that scene to make Ben look, you know, active within the game and look like he's gaining allies and getting people to turn on their former allies, even potentially. So I still continue to believe for sure that Ben, no reason not to think that he, at least for me, would be the number one winner candidate just by process of looking so good across the board, when I think everyone else, even the other strongest winner candidates, have been shown looking, I would say, pretty bad, at least in certain points. And I think if we want to talk about what Ben might be other than the winner, I am probably looking squarely at this point at the person who loses in the finals. It seems like these days that continues to be the pattern with how they edit the people who just go deep, the eventual final winner and compelling losing finalist. I'm talking, of course, about the last four seasons where we've had, as I've mentioned this in previous edit zones, but just as a quick recap, and it's felt to me like the last four seasons have been sequentially Jeremy and Spencer, and then Michelle and Aubrey, and then Adam and Ken, and then Sarah and Brad being the real primary focuses, much more so than anyone else in the story. And I would say at this point, Ben is clearly one half of that equation for me. If I had a gun to my head right now, I would frankly still be saying the other half of that equation would be Chrissy, I think, would be the leading candidate for that. Once again, we see a little bit of Chrissy like struggling at the reward challenge, although politically, I think this was a better episode for Chrissy than the one last week, potentially. I think she continues to overall look really good. Overall, I think they want us to continue really liking Chrissy and rooting for her. So I know there are plenty of other people who are high on, for instance, like Jessica or Devin or maybe Ryan or Ashley to be in there as the other finalists as well. But for me, I'm still looking first and foremost at Ben and Chrissy. But I do want to point out, I have been wrong for two seasons and counting about how these things are going to play out. So it would not shock me whatsoever if that ends up not being the case. But I really do feel like these two in particular have been getting so much more positive, visible content than the rest of the field. And actually, to move on to Ryan, who I think, along with Allie, had been the other two in that mix for both me and Dom going up to this point, where we had Ben, Chrissy, Ryan, and Allie as the four lead candidates, just because of the screen time that it seemed like they were getting. And Allie now, of course, out of the picture. I feel like Ryan has gone from, as I framed it during the first few weeks, looking about as good as they could make him look. I really feel like he's starting to take a turn here. It began last week with everything going on around that Rourke vote, and then this week he was talking about, he got a confessional where he said, you know, Allie coming back and railing into me like that was a really bad look for Allie, which I don't think I was alone in feeling like was ironically a really bad look for Ryan giving that confessional. And then furthermore, when he is in the position that people are still on his side and have come around, he gets the confessional saying, like, I don't know why they're trusting me. I wouldn't trust me. I'm a weasel. I, for whatever reason, and this is, again, Colin Stone reads too much into the exact verbiage that the editors decide to leave in. If they cut that after, I wouldn't trust me, I wouldn't think too much of that, because we get plenty of masterminds saying, I can't believe these people are trusting me. The fact that they left him in saying, I'm a weasel, I have a really hard time believing that that's meant to make him look good, or like that they wouldn't think that most people would have a decidedly negative response to someone self-describing as a weasel. I feel like you never really, like, Pauly Shore is the weasel. No one ever likes the guy who's the weasel. So I am definitely lower on Ryan, I would say. And now with Allie out of the picture, that is why I would feel like Ben and Chrissy are the overwhelming top two for me. Now, someone else that we got, that has been getting, I should say, some accolades these days in the edit game, and this is the part of the email that we got from Eddie, is Jessica, who I would agree with the people that are on board with this. She has been getting a lot of solid
positive content. And this email actually from Eddie was from last week. And so he says, I think Ben, began with talking about how Ben and the PTSD thing was not potentially too much of a big deal. But Eddie says, I think Ben exists in a cluster that also includes Chrissy, Ryan, Allie, and again, this is last week, hard to blame him for that, and Jessica. And as of right now, I feel the best about Jessica. I might be falling for the tricks, but her level of positive visibility, despite avoiding every tribal council, has really raised my eyebrows. Maybe she's just that third place finalist or ramps up her game and wins. We could also be in store for her win resulting in another fan favorite robbed G.Otis. Like, for instance, if Jessica goes in and gets to the end with someone like a Joe type, for instance, although that's probably a bad example. But in this case, it doesn't seem like they would be natural allies, but someone that the jury would be potentially mad at. I could see Jessica definitely scooping up a win in almost the like Natalie White variety. And again, I always feel like I'm being disrespectful to both the person I'm comparing Natalie White to, as well as Natalie White, and using her as the example for that. But I do think people understand what you mean when you say the Natalie White kind of default win, when no one was going to ever, other than like Shambo and what's the guy's name, John Fincher, and who was the third vote for Russell? I'm going to try to come up with, or did he only get those two? The point is the Galoo team was never voting for Russell, and we could see Jessica potentially get a win in that mold. And I would agree with that. I do feel very good about Jessica. She has been popping up more than I would probably expect someone like her to, unless she became a big character down the line eventually. So I will definitely have my eyes peeled on Jessica. And if anyone was going to be the kind of dark horse that I think a lot of people were sleeping on for the first like four or five episodes, I think she is the front runner to be that person. Now, the other name that I've heard thrown out there is Devin. And this, to go back to Damien's email, where he also began by berating us for being so high on Ben. He says, conversely to Ben, I'm amazed at how far you're underselling Devin. I'd hesitate to give an against the field hot take because I actually think the field is pretty open so far, but I'd probably put his edit through five episodes as high as anyone else's. His coverage has been slightly hidden, but very gameplay positive. He's shown building relationships and making the right strategic calls, and that Probst approved level where the audience might feel that a win was deserved, but not so over the top that casuals and podcast hotheads such as myself would notice him. So I think these are compelling points about Devin, and he's a name that I've brought up a couple of times, just kind of throwing out there at the end of our edgit conversations. And I'm going to give Damien the benefit of the doubt here. Again, this is the guy who was one of the original edgit people back in the day. We've certainly had winners of this nature go lower key early on. Fabio comes to mind, where he was just getting kind of goofball stuff. And I don't think Devin is really the same kind of goofball that Fabio is. So if you're, I do agree that they've been kind of weaving Devin in places where it does make sense. He's looking good, but it's not so overwhelming that idiots like myself would overreact and call him the winner after like episode one, by virtue of the fact that he got three confessionals or whatever. So I will definitely grant that Devin should still be someone to be on the lookout for. And the only other person at this point that I'm really looking strongly at, even as like among the, in this dark horse camp, I still think there may be something to Ashley, although I'm not expecting that to come in a ton of the time. I still think Ashley is in the mix for me, just because if she did win, I don't think it would look the same thing we've been saying about her for weeks. She's kind of like almost girl Devin, where I don't think they would want to oversell her so hard the way that they probably did with like a Michelle Fitzgerald comes to mind, when you suddenly just start blasting the audience with overwhelmingly positive stuff that has no real reason for being in there in the first place, from the type of person that they tend to cast aside more often than not, it really does stand out. So maybe if they are trying to adjust a little bit, it could be more, this Ashley edit could be more the direction that they go. So I still would be having her in there with some percentage chance. no one else is jumping out to me right now, and I've done all of this, I can't believe, in one take. I think it's gone well, so I'm going to try to just get out of here before I screw something up. I guess plugs one last time. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. Thanks once again, of course, to Lita for being an excellent guest this week. BB7 week 6 will be up very soon after you hear this. It'll be up Tuesday for the people, and it's already up actually for the patrons. If you would like to find out more about becoming a patron, patreon.com/DomandColin. Thank you so much for tuning in. Next week, Dom and I are both going to be in New York City, as mentioned a couple times on this podcast. I will be getting back sometime over the weekend, and I think he's going to be traveling for a while, so I'm not entirely sure what's coming next week in terms of a Survivor podcast. There is an outside chance Dom and I might do our first ever live in-person podcast. We'll see if that happens. That would be fun. If not, it will probably be me back here with yet another guest next week. But after these next couple weeks, it's going to be a hell of a lot easier going forward for podcasting. So really, really looking forward to all of that, and I guess that's going to do it for this week. Thanks once again for listening. Take care, everybody.